Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. Violence in Nigeria. At least 47 people were killed and dozens others injured in a bomb attack on a crowded market in Borno State. The blast hit Tuesday at a market in Sabongari. No one claimed responsibility for the attack in Nigeria. U.S. officials have accused an international group of hackers and stock traders of stealing insider information and making as much as $100 million in illegal profits. Federal authorities in New Jersey said Tuesday it is the biggest scheme of its kind ever prosecuted. Authorities say hackers stole financial and other information from companies that publish press releases. Paul Fishman is the U.S. attorney for New Jersey.
We allege that the conspirators stole more than 100,000 news releases, traded ahead of more than 800 company releases, and made more than $30 million.
Nine people in the U.S. and Ukraine have been indicted for alleged fraud. More than 20 other individuals and companies face related civil complaints. China's central bank devalued its currency by nearly 2% on Tuesday. The move will make China's exports less expensive and more competitive. It will also make items imported into China more expensive for Chinese consumers. The change follows slumping exports and stock market turmoil in China's economy. China's devaluation prompted worries about economic growth, and major stock market indexes in the U.S. and Britain were down 1% or more on Tuesday. A young Mississippi couple has been arrested and charged with trying to join Islamic State militants in Syria. Mohammed Dak Lala and his fiance were arrested by the FBI in Mississippi on Saturday as they prepared to embark on a plane trip to Turkey. The pair were charged with conspiring and attempting to provide material to support to Islamic State. This is VOA News. Greece and its creditors have agreed in principle on broad terms of a new three-year bailout. Some details of the plan were yet to be finalized on Tuesday. European Commission spokeswoman Annika Breithart, a key mediator of the talks, confirmed the progress on what is expected to be a $94 billion package. The UN Special Envoy to Libya has urged the country's warring factions to agree on a national unity government by the end of this month. Bernardino León would like the parties to endorse it by early September. Leon issued the appeal in Geneva at the start of a new round of Libyan peace talks. He said a good sign an accord can be reached in the next 3 weeks is that all members of the warring factions are participating in the peace negotiations in Geneva. Iraq's parliament has unanimously approved Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi's proposed government reforms to tackle corruption and cut spending. Mr. Abadi proposed the changes on Sunday, including elimination of the largely symbolic offices of three vice presidents and three deputy prime ministers. Mr. Abadi's plan calls for ending party and sectarian quotas when choosing officials. Billionaire Don Trump may have taken some hits in last week's Republican presidential debate, but so far it doesn't appear to be hurting him in the polls. The latest Reuters Ipsos national poll found Mr. Trump holding steady at the top of the Republican field with 24%, followed by former Florida Governor Jeb Bush at 12%. Investigators probing last year's downing of Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 over eastern Ukraine have found fragments that may have come from a Russian surface-to-air missile. Fred Westerbeke is the Dutch national prosecutor.
We found some parts which were not part of the aircraft, of the airplane. And in the last few months, we have established that we can say that these probably are parts of a missile system and probably a book missile system.
Australia's announced targets for reductions in its greenhouse gas emissions. Steve Herman has more.
Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott says his country, as part of a global climate deal, will strive to cut emissions 26% to 28% from levels a decade ago by the year 2030. In announcing the target, Mr. Abbott explained his country has to be both environmentally and economically responsible.
But we've got to reduce our emissions in ways which are consistent with continued strong growth.
Australian opposition politicians and environmentalists panned the proposal, which will be submitted to climate talks in Paris in December. Steve Herman, Bangkok.
For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. From the VOA News Center in Washington, this is Joe Palca reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, August 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan rebels are denying reports of a split in their ranks.
There is a difference between a split and defections. What we have seen is a defection of some disgruntled generals who have been reshuffled out of our command hierarchy.
Stephen Powell-Cool, a spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, will have a report on the latest round of South Sudan peace talks in Addis Ababa. The United Nations is pushing for a final Libyan peace deal by September this year, and Rwanda celebrates the release of its intelligence chief from British arrest.
We are delighted that he is coming home to his country and family and friends. We are also saying that he should not have been arrested in the first place.
Johnston Businge is Rwanda's justice minister. Somalia marks a year as a polio-free country, and unrest marks the first anniversary of the shooting death of an unarmed black teenager in Ferguson, Missouri. Those stories plus Mark Goldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar are denying reports of a split in their ranks. This comes as top rebel commanders Gato Gatkuov and Peter Gadet announced Tuesday that they had split with Machar's forces. The two generals said they will now be fighting against both Machar's rebels and the South Sudan Army. Rebel spokesman Stephen Powell-Cool says there is no split in the rebel movement, but rather a defection by what he calls two disgruntled generals who have been reshuffled out of the rebel command hierarchy.
There is a difference between a split and defections. What we have seen is a defection of some disgruntled generals who have been reshuffled out of our command hierarchy. They have not been dismissed yet as members of the movement. But what we have seen from the way they talk, the way they responsibly issue a statement, you have to call it defection, not a split.
Generals Gatkuov and Peter Gadet, is the decision to dismiss them from your movement, does that have anything to do with the fact that they have been blacklisted by the United Nations? They've been sanctioned.
Well, this has nothing to do with that. You know, if that's what they want to fight out with the government of South Sudan and the SPLM-SPLA, then that is also a wrong way to do it. We, as a movement, we supported them. They have been part of our fighting force since December 2013, and we have not betrayed them. They are the one who have betrayed the movement.
They have accused former Vice President Riek Machar of seeking power for himself.
This is completely wrong. Dr. Riek Machar has never taken to the bush of South Sudan to seek power. He was dismissed as a vice president, and he was calling for calm and harmony among the people of South Sudan until he was wrongfully accused of a coup, which was eventually dismissed in court by the current dictator, Salva Kiir Mayardit. Dr. Riek Machar has been seeking peace since then. What we have seen in the IGAD Plus as power-sharing metric was not even proposed by him. It was a conflict resolution remedy proposed even by the mediators.
General Gadet and Gatkuov, yes, saying now they are going to fight against both your movement and the government of South Sudan.
Well, let me tell you, that statement by itself is a fairy tale. What do they have to fight the government and the movement? Which power do they have to do that?
Bring us up to date. Where are we in the negotiations now, where you are in Addis Ababa, the talks?
Well, we are still negotiating with the government.
And do you think now, this time around, something good will come out of the talks?
I cannot speculate about the outcome of the talk. But what you need to understand, and your audience, is that this is not a simple program designed by one person. This is a regional initiative to resolve conflict in South Sudan. It is now called IGAD Plus. That means the IGAD states plus some other African countries, supported by TRICA, European Union, the United Nations, and the African Union. So it is a global approach to resolve conflict in South Sudan.
Stephen Powell Cole, a spokesman for Rebels, lawyer to former South Sudan Vice President Riek Machar. He was speaking with me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. The latest round of South Sudan peace talks has opened in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Delegates from the South Sudan government and Riek Machar's Rebels met privately Tuesday to try iron out their differences on some key issues that are standing in the way of reaching a peace deal. The parties are trying to meet an August 17th deadline imposed by the IGAD Plus group of nations. John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Addis Ababa.
The two sides are trying to find a workaround for differences that have so far been an obstacle to peace. Chief among those differences are the demilitarization of Juba and how much power each side should have in a transitional government. Government spokesman Michael Makui says the bilateral talks with the rebels have been cordial so far. He says he expects the talks to produce results.
We are hopeful that with this reduced number of participation, we will be in a position at least to reduce the areas of disagreement in some parts. And whatever that may not be agreed, we'll continue with it tomorrow also at that level. And after that, we'll put the document in its final form with all the agreed and disagreed areas and present it to the mediators.
Makui says the government has made concessions on many difficult issues. He says President Salva Kiir is willing to set up a hybrid court, in other words, a tribunal made up of South Sudanese and international judges to hold people accountable for crimes committed during the 20-month-long conflict.
We agree that there shall be established a hybrid court, but there is a provision there which says the establishment, the composition, all these things shall be by legislation.
The United States backs the creation of a hybrid court system. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry donated $10 million in May this year to help set up such a legal system in South Sudan. Makui says the hybrid court must be set up in line with South Sudanese laws. Civil society groups attending the talks say they are satisfied with the negotiations so far. Ben Gideon is a member of the Citizens for Justice and Peace group. He says he has seen significant changes in the behavior of the delegates at the talks, including that they are now taking suggestions from coalitions like his.
Our contribution has been taken into consideration. We will only prove the contrary in the next round of talks when areas of agreement are separated and areas of disagreement are separated. This is to confirm whether the stakeholders' contribution have been reflected in the areas of agreement or otherwise.
With the clock ticking down to next week's deadline for a peace deal, the hopes of South Sudanese and the international community are resting on the shoulders of the men behind the closed doors of a room in Addis Ababa where the two sides are still holed up in their private talks. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza reporting from Addis Ababa.
Rwanda's justice minister says his country is delighted that Intelligence Chief General Karenzi Karike has been released in Britain, where he was arrested last June on allegations he ordered the massacre of ethnic Hutus while head of military intelligence during Rwanda's 1994 genocide. But Johnston Businge said his government strongly believes General Karike should never have been arrested in the first place. This came as the country Tuesday celebrated General Karike's release. Businge said the arrest is part of a campaign by those who denied the 1994 genocide.
We are delighted that he is coming home to his country and family and friends. We are also saying that he should not have been arrested in the first place. We said so from day one, from the day he was arrested. We are still saying the same.
So your government maintains he did nothing wrong?
Yeah, we think he had done nothing wrong. We think he had his diplomatic immunity, which was not supposed to be violated. And we think also that the indictment pursuant to which the arrest warrant was issued in 2008 were all flawed and also had been set aside by the Spanish High Court. So we do not think there was any reason to arrest him in the first place.
Mr. Minister, your government is saying that you regard the arrest, which you describe as discredited, as just a tactic by those who deny the genocide of 1994. What does that mean?
What it means is a number of things. One, that if you read the indictment that was issued in 2008 by a Spanish judge,
It looks on all fours. It's a political manifesto of the FDLR, almost a copy and paste. Number two, if you look at the NGOs which were behind the indictment, the number of them have been cited by the United Nations as having a serious role in supporting and mobilizing funds and campaigning for the FDLR. So we are actually convinced that this indictment is in absolute bad faith. It is politically motivated. It is not a quest for justice. It is simply a piece of genocide denial using the cover of international justice.
On another topic, I was reading, Mr. Minister, that I think it said that only 10 people in your country opposed to President Kagame seeking another term.
Well, I read about this morning. I am not in Kigali right now. But the parliament and the House of Deputies and Senate have been in the countryside in the last 2 weeks speaking to citizens across the hills and villages in Rwanda. And from the reports I got, they encountered 10 people who were opposed to amendment of our constitution. Now, I do not know that in Rwanda there are 10 people, but I know from what I read that from the parliamentarians' tour of the countryside, they made only 10 people show that.
Johnston Businge is Rwanda's justice minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kigali. Today's Wednesday, August 12th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Buddy in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. As a new round of Libyan peace talks gets underway, the chief United Nations mediator says he believes it is possible to hammer out a final agreement by early September. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the site of the negotiations in Geneva.
After many months of complex and difficult negotiations, Special Representative of the Secretary General for Libya, Bernardino León, says he sees a light at the end of the tunnel. He says much progress has been made toward reaching an agreement to form a unity government. Libya is bitterly divided between an internationally recognized government in the eastern city of Tobruk and an Islamist government based in the capital, Tripoli. The country has been in turmoil since former dictator Muammar Gaddafi was overthrown in 2011. Some parties to the conflict initialed a peace agreement on July 11. León says he will build on this achievement by focusing on persuading the holdouts to sign on to the unity government accord during this round of talks. He says one good sign that an accord can be reached during the next 3 weeks is that all members of the warring factions have come to Geneva and are participating in the new peace round.
This will very much depend on the political will and on the creativity, on the wisdom of the parties to bring good names, good proposals on the table. So if this was possible, then the endorsement and final voting and signing of the agreement could happen in the first weeks of September, so that the final conclusion of this process can be achieved before we have the UN General Assembly.
León recognizes this ideal situation might still prove to be elusive, but he believes everybody now is on board and wants to make it work. He adds there are many reasons for the warring factions to finally come together and agree to peace.
What Libya is facing now is deeper chaos and division of the country. So I hope all the Libyan actors will be wise to avoid this scenario, to expedite the talks and to reach an agreement very soon. I think it is extremely risky to reach October without an agreement, because we will be in a more chaotic situation.
León says the political side of the negotiations is more advanced than the security aspects. He says he plans to gather members of the army and militias around the negotiating table. He says it is essential to have military support and to have measures for implementing security arrangements as part of the final accord. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Somalia on Tuesday celebrated 1 year as a polio-free nation following a rigorous vaccine and awareness campaign by the Somali government, the World Health Organization, and UNICEF. Polio re-emerged in Somalia in 2013. Since then, the country has recorded 5 deaths and 189 disabled by the disease. Dr. Abdikani Sheikh Omar is Director General of the Somali Ministry of Health.
You know, there's a standard guideline. Now that at 12 months there was no polio cases in Somalia, we need to arrange a meeting next week, 15th August, that all stakeholders, including a technical team from East Mediterranean region, EMRO, WHO, Geneva representatives, as well as the Somali government representatives, will meet in Nairobi soon. Then we will review the reports. And then according to the WHO standard, we will have an official communique that we will declare by the end of this year that Somalia has a fully reached declaration of polio eradication. But, you know, in that aspect, we are not going to stop the efforts that you already put in. We will continue our efforts in terms of campaigns, in terms of improving the health system, in terms of health information. We will be vigilant unless we will declare all that Somalia is a polio-free country.
How many people died for the disease since the outbreak in 2013?
The death is not more than 5 cases, as you have already the reports we have, around 189, mainly disabled people not living with the disease.
So all the 189 people are disabled because of their polio?
Most of them, because, you know, disease can be prevented only, but, you know, once the disease happens, the recovery takes 2 months, and it's not easy to be recovered because it creates a paralysis of the limbs, which is not simple to be get a full recovery. But the only thing that we can do is just for prevention and taking the vaccine. That is the only way to prevent. But once the disease happens, it's very hard to recover.
What are the chances of this disease re-emerging again?
The chance is always there because the countries are very fragile. The health system is not as strong. You know, still some districts it's not vaccinated, covered well because it's still under Al-Shabaab. It has been reduced to the vaccine to ready there. So the chance of the recurrence it is there, but we will be vigilant for all this and we will put our efforts to sustain this achievement as much as we can.
Dr. Abdikani Sheikh Omar is Director General of the Somali Ministry of Health. He was speaking with Haru Maruf of VOA Somali Service. The U.S. city of Ferguson in the state of Missouri continues to be a flashpoint 1 year after the high-profile shooting death of 18-year-old Michael Brown, an unarmed black man who was shot by a white police officer after a street confrontation. As VOA's Ken Fairbaugh reports from Ferguson, a state of emergency did not prevent further clashes between demonstrators and police during a second night of unrest in the Ambato St. Louis suburb.
As night fell on Ferguson, Missouri,
no justice! No peace!
Tensions between demonstrators and police escalated once again. Dozens of protesters repeatedly defied police orders to stay off the street.
This is the St. Louis County Police Department. Get off the roadway.
And stop traffic on West Florissant Avenue, the scene of riots and looting over the last year. As further unrest marked the anniversary of the shooting death of Michael Brown, some in the crowd in Ferguson, not far from the spot where he was shot, felt the awareness stemming from that incident has empowered them.
So they say what we're doing is excessive, but the death of Mike Brown brought an issue that's been swept under the rug to the light.
The activists, the protesters, the people who are really down for change, a lot has changed with them. Like a lot of us have been awakened in a way we couldn't even have imagined.
But for as much change as Tiffany Sean welcomes, she says some things have stayed the same.
Put your eye past them, protect them.
Not a lot has changed with how the police are reacting toward us and behaving with us. Not a lot has changed when it comes to that.
The beefed up police presence in Ferguson comes one night after officers shot and seriously wounded one suspect they say opened fire on them, leading to charges against the suspect and a state of emergency declared in St. Louis County to stem further violence. Those on the ground in Ferguson for another night of protests shrugged off those concerns.
Violence is going to happen. I don't want to minimize it at all because it's a problem. No one agrees with it. But it's going to happen regardless.
And when you have a body of people this large, you know what I'm saying, it's bound for there to be people who don't like each other, you know what I'm saying?
In the face of flying water bottles and rocks, police moved quickly to keep large numbers of protesters from filling the streets and stopping traffic, something they accomplished on a busy highway earlier in the day.
This is a lot milder than last year. I mean, last year it was unexpected. It was a larger body of people, so it was, the outcome was a little more dramatic. You know what I'm saying? This is more positive than last year.
Police have appealed for calm as more protests are expected. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Ferguson, Missouri.
Time now for Daybreak Africa's portion. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with netball. Malawi edged Uganda 59-53, Trinidad and Tobago beat Zambia 66-39, and South Africa dismissed Wales 68-40 at the Netball World Cup in Sydney, Australia on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Zambia challenged Samoa. Malawi face New Zealand as South Africa encounter Australia. In handball, Qatar edged Algeria 24-21, Iceland pipped Egypt 31-29, while France outplayed Tunisia 34-24 at the Men's Youth World Handball Championships in Yekaterinburg, Russia on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Egypt play Venezuela as Algeria encounter Switzerland. Turning to football, former International Olympic Committee IOC Director General Francois Carrard of Switzerland is to head the FIFA Task Force on Reforms, the World Football Governing Body FIFA disclosed on Tuesday. The 2016 FIFA Reform Committee Carrard will chair include two representatives from each of FIFA's six confederations. The committee will crystallize reform proposals to be presented for approval at the FIFA Extraordinary Elective Congress in Zurich, Switzerland on the 26th of February next year. It is at this meeting that a new FIFA president will be elected to replace incumbent Joseph Sepp Blatter. On the 2nd June, Blatter declared he would step down from office barely a week after being re-elected to a fifth term. His unexpected decision came in the wake of unprecedented scandal and corruption allegations that have tarnished FIFA's image. Carrard is credited with guiding the IOC through its reforms following the scandal in the bidding process for the 2002 Salt Lake City Winter Olympics. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, August 12th.
Whatever that goes up must surely come down. 99 days for a thief is one day for the owner of the property. Let the Boko Haram keep killing innocent ones. The God of justice shall justify the innocent. I'm Prince John Ife in Bendi, Obaneku, Cross-Vasset, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. At least 47 people were killed and dozens others injured in a bomb attack on a crowded market in northeast Nigeria's Borno State. That's it for this Wednesday, August 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stradek, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm James Barty in Washington, saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. Around the world, the killing of Zimbabwe's beloved Cecil the Lion angered people and highlighted sport hunting in Africa. On Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they examine trophy hunting and what can be done to protect endangered species like lions, elephants, and rhinos. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Thank you.